The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. All right, John.
Yes, good. Thank you.
Now, you've been at the one-to-one conference. Was that a song in the 80s? I'm sure it was. No, eye to eye contact. I'm sure they say one to one contact. No, I don't know if they did. But explain, John, what is the one to one conference in London?
Well, there's a lot of mining guys come into town. They want to talk to loads of investors. And so the one to one team organize these direct one on one meetings. So you get a half hour slot with each company. It works very well. I spend a lot of time there talking to the investor base. I've got a team of guys who go out talking to, filtering through the companies, trying to find the best guys to talk to and just know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And so how many companies do you talk to?
Well, the team probably talk to at least a dozen companies.
I like the way you sidestepped that and said the team. How many do you talk to, John?
One.
I did a couple of company presentations, but I was pretty chock-a-block with just talking to investors about ideas and what's going on in the world and what we should be focusing on going forwards.
Although
markets are difficult at the moment, there are still investors out there looking for opportunities, and that is always heartening to feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good if it's upbeat and all that stuff. Yes, good. So, in fact, talk about South Africa. You just mentioned before we came on that the Rand is not performing very well. What's happening to the Rand? It's crashing or something, is it? What's going on?
Well, the Rand is down nearly 20% in sterling terms, 17.5%, and it's down 13.5% in US dollar terms. So that's a big move for a currency. It's not being helped by Liz Truss, but of course the ANC is helping it lower in their own way. The latest move is because the US ambassador has now formally accused the South African government of supplying weapons to Russia. So there's a weapons delivery ship, a Russian weapons delivery ship that docked, I think in Simonstown port, and loaded up, and everybody's been trying to find out what it was loading up with, and the Americans seem to have evidence that it was being loaded with munitions and other bits of military kit. And given that South Africa claims to be a non-aligned independent nation, it doesn't look good.
No. So what'll happen with that? Sanctions? What's going on,
Well, there's bound to be some sort of sanctions, probably against ANC officials, but also maybe against some South African companies, that kind of thing. I mean, the Americans are not going to let this go unpunished. At the same time, you've got stage 6 load shedding across most of South Africa because the power utility is in such disarray. There's so much corruption.
Stage 6. Stage 1 is what? Is it gets worse as the numbers go up, does it?
Yeah, it gets a lot worse. So stage 6 means you're on about 11.5 hours of zero power at home.
Wow. Half a 24-day, pretty much you've got no power at home.
Yep.
That's nuts. I've not seen that on any news or anything. That's nuts, that is, isn't it?
Well, it's been such a gradual process over a few years. Hmm. Everybody's got bored of talking about it, but there is the potential for complete grid collapse. And what happens is if the power utility can't supply enough power to keep the grid going, then all the circuit breakers start to trip out. You get total grid collapse, and then it can take a minimum of 2 or 3 weeks to restart the national grid. So it could be that the whole country loses power if they're not careful. So it's quite a dangerous situation, actually.
Yeah, doesn't sound very pleasant. Even when we have a power cut here now and again, we've had him recently, a few weeks back, For the first couple of hours, you've got to do things that need power, and you forget all about it. You know, like to put the kettle on and put the lights on and do anything. You think, oh, we have no power. And I think that, you know, is, for us, is a mere inconvenience for a couple of hours or a few hours or half a day. But that constantly happening, I suppose in the end, you must get used to it and work around it. But it's not good, is it, having to live like that, you know?
Well, the South Africans are known for their innovation. And you know, they've got power generators at home. They're installing massive amounts of solar power and other renewable things. So they are really working hard to work around it. But if you're running a large company that is connected to the grid, you're either got to take on much higher power costs through self-generation, if you've got the self-generation, or you have to suffer the power outage. And it's actually really difficult for these guys.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Well, let's hope it gets better there. But let's talk about some individual companies here. You've mentioned Celsius Resources before. What are they, just remind us what they do, John.
Celsius have the MCB copper mining project in the Philippines. It's up in the north of the Philippines, and it's a really good project, actually. They renounced some drill results. This is in shallow drilling. So,
hang on, John. Sorry. Before we go into that, talking about, I didn't mention this beforehand, but we often talk about China, and everyone says bad data's come out. But anyway, I have to think about that. Well, carry on with Celsius. We'll catch up on the China data later, maybe, and we'll say what's going on, because it drives a lot of, you know, resource prices, but just what data it was. But anyway, Celsius, go on. Sorry, go for it.
Well, I just want to remind people that the copper grades coming out of this MCB project in the Philippines are fantastic. 0.9% in this day and age is a very good copper grade when it's at surface, or just 10, 11 meters from surface is brilliant. So hopefully there'll be a lot more of that. But it is a sensible mining project. They are going through the documentation and approvals process to get their mining license together. The news today was that Celsius, who'd taken out one of these convertible loan facilities, had actually terminated it. So they're repaying that facility, and that seems to be a trend. If you've got enough, if things are going well for you, and you've got some cash in the tin, it's always worth repaying one of these facilities. So they'd taken it out when cash was short, and now when everything's going very much better, they're just paying it off. So that was today's news, which is good. But it's a good opportunity to say, look, guys, this is actually a sensible project. It's being run by some good people, and hopefully that will continue to grow.
Yeah. So was it Chinese consumer price inflation barely grew? Was that there while producer index shrank? What's happening there? What's some of the Chinese data?
Yeah, the data yesterday was the CPI fell by 0.1%. Now, that sounds like a small number, but the fact is it's falling. So, you know, in the West, we've still got very high inflation in the UK. But in the US, inflation numbers are coming down, and they can see that those inflation numbers are going to come down further. So the good part about that is that the US interest rate should stop rising quite soon and start falling again. I mean, let's face it, mortgage holders cannot afford to have high mortgage rates for very long. I think the Bank of England very reluctantly raised rates this week. I'm quite sure they didn't really want to, because they know how much pain that's going to cause to anyone refinancing their mortgage. And there's not much, you know, there's not much they can really do about that. But what they can do, and what they will do as soon as they see inflation coming off, is they'll try and reduce those interest rates again, because otherwise it's just going to be too politically unacceptable for any government in power. So now the thing about China right now is that it feels like their economy's just really hit the buffers. They've been over. They came out of lockdown. They ramped up all the factories, and suddenly they're struggling to sell their products. Internal demand is just not there. They've never really worked hard enough on internal demand. But see, a lot of Chinese people are waiting to move into flats that just haven't been finished. In fact, big property development companies like Evergrande and others, just they took people's money. They even effectively took your money as if you were moving in. So these people are paying mortgages, but they can't move into the flats because the property developers haven't bothered to finish them. And so all of that's got to work its way through. The Chinese government has been cajoling these companies to get on with it. And when I say cajoling, it's a bit like if you don't get on with it, you're going to end up in some correctional jail for a while. So all that is working through. But I think in the meantime, Chinese manufacturers are going to have to sell discounted products overseas in very large numbers, and that will actually be deflationary to some degree for the rest of the world. Yeah. We've got low oil prices, which is good. Oil's down at $73 a barrel. Gas prices came off a while ago, so God knows why UK energy prices are still so high, because when I pay my electricity bill, I notice I'm still paying about 42 pence per kilowatt hour for my electrical power. So hopefully that will start to come off soon. And, yeah.
So the same, the inflation in China. So essentially, we're saying that the reopening of China was talked about, wasn't it, as a possible worrying inflationary, or is going to you know, help a lot of things, or maybe it'll stoke inflation. But it really hasn't happened, has it? The reopening has literally gone up with it's like a big sort of celebration, fireworks going off. Literally, it's like a candle being blown out. Nothing's happened, is it? Really, what's going on?
Yeah, exactly. That I think, look, the government probably did whatever, as much as they could. They ramped everything up, but they haven't stimulated demand. And they know how to do it, actually, because they have this policy called dual circulation, which is a very odd term. But that policy is to stimulate certain regions of China in order to try and create a more consumption-led economy.
Yeah.
But they got kind of greedy. They decided they wanted to sell more products around the world and not really help their own people buy anything much. And now that strategy is coming home to roost, because if local people aren't buying washing machines and dishwashers and the stuff they're producing, then they're going to have to sell it at lower prices overseas.
Yeah, well, I mean, just CPI was forecast. This is year-on-year consumer price index. It's supposed to come in at 0.4%, and it came in 0.1%. So previously it was, 0.7. So it is, month-on-month, it was forecast coming in at flat, zero. But it came in at minus 0.1, so the prices are creeping down. So that's
Producer price inflation in China is minus 3.6%.
Yeah, minus 3.6%, yeah.
Wow. The Bank of England and the US Fed would love to see that sort of number, but in fact, if anything, that's almost a dangerous number, because it says you've got problems with the economy.
Yeah. But I suppose if they export a lot from the world, it's not bad for every other country with inflation. Too much inflation, isn't it? I suppose exporting that.
Yes, it looks like they're in a better situation than the West at the moment, but they're not having to, they've got the benefits of cheap Russian oil and things like that. And we're having to cope with the costs of fighting Russia in the Ukraine, which is considerable. Mm. So, and that's one of the big drivers for food inflation is actually the Ukrainian situation. In China, that is some impact, but much less than we see.
Yeah, okay. In the week, every morning I look at the most read RNSs on the Vox Markets platform here, because we send out RNSs, and often the top ones, the company's been around for a while, they've got a news story flow out there, what's happening, and so, that's generally the most popular. But this week, a new company IPO'd was in the top three. I thought, what? What's all that about? So people to read these RNSs essentially have to follow them, follow the companies first and foremost, and they have to have been around for a while for people to follow them to get a good read across. But Golden Metal Resources, GMET, was one of the top five. That's unusual for a company IPOing to be in one of those popular red RNSs. But so Golden Metal Resources. There's a reason why they're popular, because they're linked to Power Metal, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. They're a spin-out from Power Metal Resources, which has got a lot of exploration licenses around different parts of the world. They are focusing their efforts on what they're doing elsewhere in the world, in Botswana. And so Gold Metal Resources, which has the Pilot Mountain project in Nevada, which we think is a very good project, it's a tungsten project out there. In fact, one of my colleagues built a tungsten mine not long ago in Spain. It was very successful construction and commissioning and was then immediately snapped up by a Canadian group called Almonte, who've run it ever since. So we have confidence that the Pilot Mountain tungsten project is good. It's in Nevada, which we see is a good state within the US. Quite happy about that. And they have a series of other things in Nevada, which also look like they've got reasonable prospects. They've got copper gold porphyries, copper gold epithermals, sorry, gold silver epithermals, and other bits and pieces which have some promise. But for us, Pilot Mountain is the valuable piece within that portfolio.
Yeah, okay. And lastly, Serabi Gold. Now, I've heard of them before, but you've been out to visit them once, haven't you, John? It took a while to get there, didn't you?
Some years ago, I spent a happy long weekend travelling into the middle of the Amazon rainforest to go and see Serabi. It's not for the faint-hearted, and I was a bit concerned about flying a single engine plane in across the Amazon, but I've been told by many pilots that actually, if you're going to have a crash in a plane, it's much better if you're in the Amazon to have a crash in a single engine plane rather than a double engine plane.
Well, that's reassuring.
Well, yes, apparently.
So, to be honest, because they don't want to crash in a plane, full stop.
that's right.
A plane. Yeah,
but if you are in a single engine plane and you have to crash into the canopy of the rainforest, it's much better because it's not such a heavy plane. So very heavier planes with two engines tend to, they have two crashes. You have the crash when you hit the canopy, and then you have the crash when the tree throws you back out again. Whereas a single engine plane, you can pretty much ditch it straight into the canopy, and assuming you survive that, you've got a better chance of survival going forwards.
Right, yeah. If it's just a chat of, better chance of survival. I think, well, I don't even look at those odds, to be honest. But Serabi, then I can imagine you looking, just you and your map on your own, looking at the Amazon jungle, trying to find Serabi gold there. So how long did it take you to get there?
It took me 2 days to get in there. And it does take a little while the pilot has to fly around to locate the landing strip. Then you have to fly around the landing strip to say that you're there, because they put oil drums out on the landing strip so that bandits can't just fly in and shoot up the place and steal the gold. And Serabi do mine quite high-grade gold out there. So they've done it reasonably successfully over the years.
Sounds like a lovely place to visit. And anyway, what are they doing? What's the news from Serabi?
Well, they have a new partnership with Vale. Vale is a very large Brazilian mining group. It's mainly known for its iron ore, but it does a bunch of other things. And so they're going to work with Vale on progressing a number of copper projects within Serabi's portfolio, within the Pilauto complex. So they've got porphyry-style mineralization at Batilda, and that's just about 5 kilometers west of the Sao Chico mine. So, you know, Serabi, they're well ingrained in that area. They know how to operate. They've been there for many, many years. I think that's quite exciting. So well done, Serabi, for teaming up with Vale. This is symptomatic of large mining companies trying to get out there and find new things. Mm. Now, it would be nice to see Rio Tinto and BHP doing more of this. I suspect they are doing more than we see, because they don't really go around advertising all the little bits of exploration that they have going on in the world. I mean, for example, Rio Tinto are working with Blue Jay in Finland, which is quite a good project. You've got Cobalt Metals, which is also working with Blue Jay. You've got BHP working with various people, mainly in Australia, but there is stuff going on. You've got Anglo-American looking to put money into ARC Minerals in Zambia. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is a longer list than we would want to mention right now.
Yeah, cool. Did this share price on the 10th, that was? When was this news out? 2 days ago, on the 10th. And did the share price even move? I think it did it? It went up and came back down. Yeah, so it literally jumped up and came back down.
Well, it, yeah. Look, there's no denying it's a tough market environment out there, and you know, this is why investors are out there looking for opportunities. It feels kind of like where we were early in 2020, and when markets collapsed with the COVID news, and then things bounced along the bottom for a little bit, but before they picked up again.
Hopefully, because you know what? It's, I was speaking to a colleague of yours, Vadim, about the tedious market this is, just really wearing you down. You know, it's almost you can see why people are leaving, because nothing is going on. If something rises, people sell into it. It's almost capitulation by boredom, you know. And so hopefully it'll change soon, because I'm finding it very hard. It's been going on now for like 600 days, aim from the high. So it's been a long time, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, it's look. I mean, it's you know when everybody feels that they've had enough, that's sort of the time to step in and buy again. But you know you have to be brave and you have to be patient. Because I mean, who knows how if China announced some enormous stimulus package tomorrow, then probably global markets take off again.
Yeah. Well, that's what they do tomorrow, even though it's a Saturday. But do they do that on Saturday?
No, they don't. Okay. Well, not like, usually.
Well, it's odds against then they're going to announce that tomorrow. Maybe Monday. Okay. Cheers, John. Speak next week.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.